Hi, I'm Tam.
And I'm Eternally Mortal.
And this is the Hidden Egg Podcast, where we talk about vulnerability.
And stuff. And things.
And Medium articles. I hope you're okay over there.
Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
And you're listening to Season 5, Episode 1, and today's theme, or this week's theme, is LGBTQ stuff.
Mm-hmm. Happy Pride.
Happy Pride.
It is June, the first episode of Season 5 of the Hidden Egg Podcast. Happy Pride, everybody. Whether you are involved in the LGBTQ community or not, I hope you're finding a wonderful time through this June, this roasty toasty June.
Do you remember being young and thinking that rainbows were just rainbows? They were just colors in the sky.
Kinda. Yeah, more or less.
Like, I don't mind that, like, LGBTQ and rainbows go together now, but, like, I don't know. I feel like straight homophobic people now just no longer appreciate rainbows at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's really sad.
The aggravated political climate going around a lot of the world right now, especially with regard to LGBTQIA plus folks, is made it to where the rainbow has become a battle flag. And yeah. Now people wear it with pride as opposed to just, you know, like, you know, before it became pride symbol, it was from a Christian's perspective, the symbol of God's promise, you know, to not kill everybody again.
There's a symbol of God's promise to not kill everybody again? God promised not to kill everybody again? I don't remember that.
That was the Noah's Ark thing. So Noah did the whole, like, gathering up two of every animal on his big-ass boat, and then they went out to sea for
Years. That was a promise not to do it again?
After the bird came back and could find land, and so they knew the waters were receding, I think it was then that God showed a rainbow as a symbol of his covenant to Noah that he would not just destroy the inhabitants of the earth ever again.
That seems presumptuous. Did God actually say that was his symbol for it, or is this an assumption that somebody had that was like, oh, it's a rainbow, this must mean that God is never going to hit us again, and that is what I should believe because my abuser would never do it again. I'm sorry, I'm not really strictly Christian, but like...
No, I totally get what you're saying, and it's up to interpretation because it's the Bible. So, like, you know, in the Bible, especially Old Testament, God was a lot more talkative back then and would just talk to people all the time. But, like, nowadays, anybody that says they're talking to God, everyone just thinks that they're crazy. So if back in the day, everyone also thought anyone talking to God was just crazy, then, yeah, they were just guessing. They were just like, oh, it's pretty and we're not dead. That must mean that we're never going to have to deal with this again.
But... So, and that's so weird, though, also, because, like, if the rainbow is considered God's promise to not kill people again like that, then wouldn't that also include gay people?
No. It's not that God won't kill people. It's that God's not going to kill every person on the planet except for a couple anymore. He can kill as many as he wants. He just can't genocide the whole planet with the exception of one family ever again. That was the promise.
I see. So that's the loophole.
Well,
anyway,
I always thought it was, even as a kid, I thought it was funny. But anyway, yeah, let's
it was a
continue.
Little tangential. Sorry about that.
We're not here to talk about Noah.
No, and now, once you explained it, I'm like, oh yeah, I do remember hearing that whole rainbow thing being a sign from God that he's sorry and he'll never do it again. But like, it never made sense to me, so I didn't. I don't know. I thought it was something that, like, a cartoon had said, not something the Bible actually said. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it admittedly has been a long time, and maybe I'm incorrect. I'm pretty sure that I'm right on this
one. No, you're probably right.
I may be incorrect. Who knows? Season 5 continue, it will proceed a lot like season 4 of the Hidden Egg podcast, where we will highlight several Medium articles that we thought were pretty awesome.
Yeah, and probably not have a weird aside beforehand in every episode, but maybe, I don't know.
I like our little weird intros.
We're fluid,
Yeah.
in many ways. So are we doing the shout outs then? Is that where we're at currently?
I think we're up to doing some shout-outs.
All right,
So
so the very first one, and kind of the one that, well, it was the second one that really made me want to do this episode as an LGBTQ. The first one is the very last article that we're doing.
We're sandwiched. We're doing a sandwich here.
So the second one that like was like, no, we have to do an LGBTQ themed one this time, was Gerald Sturgill's, is it Sturgill or Sturgill?
Unknown.
I don't think I've ever said his last name.
But Sturge,
Our resident
what was
Sturge,
it? Yep, Gerald himself.
who is a gay man who loves boobs, and it is exactly what it sounds like. It is a journey. It is a wonderful read, and I think everybody should go read it at least once. I've read it twice.
Yeah, it's very cute, and Sturge, shares himself as he likes to do. We can count on Gerald to really give a true account of what he's been through and what he believes was going on, and we appreciate that every time. And honestly, I mean, I've heard many times in my life from people that are from straight people, from cis people, from LGBTQ folk people, like everyone loves boobs. I'm sure
Everyone
that there's
loves
exceptions.
boobs.
I'm sure there's exceptions, and I don't begrudge those exceptions. You're allowed to live your life however you want to live,
No, but
but
it's a pretty safe assumption that if you see a person, they like boobs.
right, exactly.
Like,
So
even if you're not like that way sexually, they're appealing to look at. They feel good in the hand. If you own a pair, you know what I'm talking about. It's fun. So it
Squishy things are nice.
makes perfect sense to me that a gay man would still like boobs.
And Serge went through some of his past and everything in this one, telling some, giving some context about why and when and where and how, and it was a very nice article. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, without it being too graphic, I should say.
Oh yeah, no.
So and I feel like this is a pretty mostly ubiquitous experience. Maybe not everybody, but enough people that you could reasonably assume anybody. So the next shout out, I just published this today on the new Rainbow Road publication that is LGBTQ themed. And it's by Amy Stinnett. I'm not sure if I'm saying that name right, so I hope that it's not terrible. And their article is called Coming Out to My Parents. Did I even do it?
I'll be honest, I haven't even read this one yet. It's so new. So I'm gonna have to let you take the lead on sharing what this one's about.
Yeah, so I'm not gonna like go through all of the things that she says in there, but it's just her journey with coming out without coming out, basically. And kind of just sharing what her experience was and then asking, what you think. Do you think that she actually ever came out? Or do you think that she was a coward and didn't yet? Like, what's your take? So she's kind of asking for a little bit of participation in the mix, but I thought it was interesting. And
Yeah.
I compared it to in my comment to her, I compared it to heterosexuals, right? Who never told their parents that they'd have se had sex. Like they never talked to them about having sex. It's a very similar conversation. Saying that you're gay is essentially similar. It's similar to heterosexual saying I'm sexually active. They just suddenly appear with a child one day, and like there's no conversation. Is that cowardly? Maybe from some perspectives, but like, why do they need to know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's actually an experience that a lot of people have had, honestly, like gay people and even possibly even straight people or people that are, you know, bi or whatever, from our generation especially. I think that the people that are in their 40s right now, late 30s, like sometimes there just wasn't time to do the whole coming out thing. You're too busy trying to figure out how you're gonna survive in this world. Excuse my language.
Well, I believe Amy is actually of a younger generation. I think she said she's like 23 or something, early to mid-20s. So maybe not quite having the same background that we did. But I mean, still, during that age, you still kind of end up trying to figure out how to survive anyway.
Oh, I did read the first line that said back in the mid to late 80s, coming out was not an easy thing to do. And I just sort of took that as an assumption that, you know, she was roughly our age, maybe a little younger. But, you know, I'm mistaken all the time.
Well, I mean, I think coming out is still a difficult thing for a lot of people.
Some people get. I'm thrilled that some people, when they come out, it's met with happiness and celebration in some places. Very rarely, I think a lot of times it's still met with a lot of hate and rejection, and that's terrible. But I think it's slowly getting around to where some people are getting to have a positive coming out, and
So
that's amazing.
can I talk about a tangential aside for a moment?
Sure.
So there's the whole coming out battle, right? And that's its own discussion. But let's set that on a plate, okay? And with it, I want to also set things like the, virginity thing that I mentioned earlier. But I also would like to put on that same plate having kids as part of your marriage, or showing up, single day, holiday after holiday. I feel like that plate that consists of none of your freaking business stuff, that people feel entitled to harass and bully others over. I just want to shine a light on that. It's a ubiquitous experience that something on that plate is going to be sampled by everyone at some point in their lives, and they're going to have that feeling of, it is none of your business. Why are you
Okay.
hassling me about something that is none of your business?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just saw a connection there, and I was like, I know that these things are separate things. They have their own individual experiences and challenges and hurdles, but they are all a part of this societal understanding or this societal belief that your parents or your family or even your friends have the right to tell you how to live your life.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's pretty funny. No one is entitled to any part of your life. No one. You choose who can be a part of what aspects of your life you want to include people in. And yeah, if you're going to come out to family members, you're probably hoping for at least acceptance, right? So you're kind of putting the risk out there. You're putting yourself out there for that. And for a lot of people to take that opportunity, that vulnerability that a loved one is showing you, and to put it on them and to tell them that they need to be a specific way. It's the first episode. I'm cursing too much.
It's fine. We have the bleep thing now, remember?
Oh, we do have the bleep thing now. Oh my God.
So the people watching this as a video, oh, hi, Sturge. People that are watching this as a video, they're going to hear that
Wedding.
bleep sound, and they've already heard it probably at least 3 times. I'm gonna use it for mine too, so that's gonna be awesome.
Welcome in, Sturge. Good to see you, buddy. We already did your shout out, sorry. But yeah, people that take the opportunity of someone, you know, being super vulnerable and coming out as, you know, whatever aspect of the LGBTQIA plus community they are, and for the family members to take that opportunity to tell them how they should live their life and to tell them that they're wrong or bad or evil for that is just it's un it's it's it it doesn't make any sense to me. It's asinine and ridiculous and kind of horrible. I considered abusive alone. That alone is abusive. It's like someone saying, look at this cut that I have on my hand, or look at this very vulnerable thing that I have, and then someone's stabbing it. Like, it's terrible.
Well, it's kind of like they're actually like pouring gravel in it, but they think that it's pouring salt in it. Like they think that they're
Helping in
trying to
some way.
help, but what they're really doing is rubbing in unnecessary agents that could lead to an infection and sever the relationship and possibly damage that person emotionally for God knows how long.
Right, for life potentially, but yeah.
Anyway,
Did this
go ahead.
I was gonna say, did Amy's article come out with positive stuff also, or was it really
Yeah,
just
so
more like
I was actually going to say, like, none of this actually applies to Amy's article. Amy's article was not trauma filled that I saw at all. It was actually very, like, tame and while there were some challenges that she mentioned in it wasn't. It wasn't what we're talking about. Like, it wasn't severe. And maybe that's just because she only hinted at some of the difficulties between her and her family. I don't know. That part wasn't expressly stated. So, none of this extreme trauma part really applies to the article itself. Her article was actually quite pleasant and fun to read. It didn't leave me feeling like, oh no, this is terrible. Like that was not a part of that article.
Well, good to know, but you know how we
Yeah, we go
sometimes go on
places.
tangents. We like
So
to
then
hit some roads.
on that note, let's go to the third shout out that was kind of extreme and a bit traumatizing.
Yeah, this is one. I hope it's okay for me to say, but this is one that I found that it was very impactful to me, but it does have an enormous amount of trauma throughout it. It's incredibly vulnerable. Like, it is all about this person's experience and what they've gone through and how it has shaped them and why their perception is the way that it is. And so I was really, really touched by the article. But we also, we're Is it time to bring up the whole consent thing that we're talking about too?
Oh, yeah, sure.
So we're trying to be really good about season 5 with making sure consent is sexy, about making sure that we get consent from the authors that we're highlighting in our episodes, preferably before we do the episode, to make sure that people are okay with us talking about their articles. And we also did for season 4, we did some merch with the names of all the writers that we highlighted in our episodes for season 4. And we're going to hopefully do something similar to that for season 5. So consent is something that we're working on, and we haven't gotten, like, we have a form that Tam created that we haven't gotten express consent from this author as of yet, which
Yeah,
is why.
so Tracy 3, she said that she filled out the form, and I don't know what happened because I didn't get the submission for one reason or another. So I didn't feel super comfortable putting this one on the thing. But it was also a little traumatic too, which is really the big part. It's not that trauma isn't good for our podcast. We definitely do trauma all the time, but this particular episode, I felt that LGBTQ stuff tends to be a little heavily weighted on the trauma in most places, and I wanted to make this episode more relatable. And that, means not traumatizing everybody with the things that happen when you are in an LGBTQ experience. So.
And you can go and find a very you can find a whole bunch of places that'll be able to show you the trauma that LGBTQIA plus folks have gone through in the past several years and all of time. Or you could go to this article right here and see a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, and this particular article is called "I'm Rejecting Gender in My 40s After a Misogynistic Catholic Upbringing" by Tracy 3. It's a really well-written article. I will say there are some parts I don't necessarily agree with, or I feel like they've gone a bit extreme with. However, it's, you know, it's an experience, and I think that for anybody who is curious about what a transgendered person who has a very female looking body goes through, and I'm on that same boat, by the way. I don't really care about gender. I think the idea of gender is nuanced, but I don't particularly care if people see me as a girl, a boy, as long as I'm not a thing, I'm fine. But yeah, anybody who wants to know what this experience is like should read this article.
Yep, absolutely. It was very good, and they have definitely been through an enormous amount. Some of the positions that they've taken have been created because of the trauma of their past, and so, you know, it kind of makes sense that they're going to be hard line about some things, and we didn't have those same experiences. But we do both kind of share that I'm okay with being called a thing, to be honest. I don't really super care. Either way, me and one of my favorite streamers have both said out loud to people that, like, we wouldn't really be unhappy with the pronoun it for us.
Yeah, I don't like it.
But this was a really impactful and powerful article, and I'm really glad I found it. And I hope Tracy 3 finds some smiles. Seems okay. Like they're doing pretty good, really.
I should also say, I don't know if Amy didn't, like, give me consent either, which is why, like, she didn't even give me in a comment any consent. There wasn't enough time, so I just put it in there as a shout out because I liked the article. It was nice.
Yeah, for the shout out articles, if we haven't gotten a consent yet, we can put them as shout outs still because we want to shout out people.
But for anybody that wants to give us consent to read their articles and talk about them on our podcast and all this other stuff, any of the articles going forward for season 5 and beyond will have a link to the consent form to do that.
Yep, absolutely. Gerald. Why would you? Oh, because I said I'm okay with being called it. I get it now. Okay. All right. That's valid.
All right. So on to our very first article. And this one was also one that you discovered.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I did. So, yeah. Murphy's Law, a member of our Discord community, put out a bisexual prince was a straight man's first crush. And it was, okay, so disclaimer, Tam, cut me off if you want to cut me off. Disclaimer, this article is about Game of Thrones character, and there will be a few Game of Thrones spoilers in the article, so be forewarned about that. But the character is one of my favorites. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know anything about Game of Thrones, and the article, like, the parts that were about this character meant virtually nothing to me because I have no connection to the character, to the story, to any of it. So it's huge, like, there's huge spoilers in it, but I, like, they just go over my head.
And they're not going to connect with you when and if you ever do read or watch the show. I read all the books for Game of Thrones that exist, and I didn't watch the show. But this character, even without having seen the visual representation, was just gorgeous. Someone that cared very deeply about the people that he cared about and did not discriminate when it came to bedroom antics. For an ancient time period piece, bi was as far as it goes, and this character was happily flirting with everybody. And the confidence of a person, any person, to be able to happily flirt with anybody is just gorgeous to me.
Yeah, and that's the part that I can connect with is the idea of finding somebody attractive that you wouldn't normally find attractive. Now, it's hard for that to really be relatable to me because I'm bisexual. I don't have rules about what is normal for me to find attractive. I just find people attractive, and that's what I'm attracted to. But I have seen a lot of times where there will be, like, I've seen on social media, I've seen conversations about between men about who would you be gay for?
Mm-hmm.
These are completely straight men. They're not attracted to other men. However, it seems to be fairly common that among men, there's always like one man that you would go gay for.
Mm-hmm.
Just because of how they are, their personality calls to them. And I know that this happens with women too, but women are a lot less weird about it. We're not like, who would you go? Well, some people might be who would you go gay for, but it's more like, you know, she might be able to turn me, or, you know, just really, sometimes we treat it as extreme admiration.
Mm-hmm.
And we just know that, like, no, you're like, you love them. Like, obviously you would do something with them if there was an opportunity to. Like, it's just, that's fine.
Yeah. I kind of have the belief, and I wouldn't stand by it. And I'm not going to fight people if they tell me that they don't fall into it. But I kind of have the belief that everybody, if they didn't feel any societal pressures at all, would be a little bi, a little interested in anybody, depending on person. At least, may I should say pan. So like, the right person, regardless of sexuality or gender, just hits the buttons in the right way, and you feel those little feelings inside. You know?
Now, see, I can't go down that rabbit hole because I believed for the longest time that everyone started out bisexual and chose which one was stronger. and I, like, you can hear from the words and everything, like, that goes down a pretty rough road where you're like, I don't know that that's someplace that we all start at, like, because it's not really something any, like, none of these other people feel like they chose a side.
Right. Yeah.
And so I had to, like, kind of do away with that. But I think it is a likely possibility that everybody has the potential for attraction to any gender based on a personality trait. And the personalities that they're exposed to end up weighing which gender they end up feeling more strongly attracted towards, potentially. Like, that's something I'm like, well, that's maybe. That's something very difficult to ascertain, like, what personalities they would be more attracted to when they're in their formative years. I don't know if we can ever actually test that. But we can know that there are many instances of people that are completely and totally straight, sometimes having one or two people that they're like, you know, if there was ever a chance, maybe not a full-on relationship, but I'd one night stand that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just a little gay.
when I thought that I was straight back in the day, I still had man crushes. I've been attracted to James McAvoy for an incredibly long time. And Brad Pitt's hot, but I think he's an asshole. But that might be why I think he's hot too. I'm not entirely sure.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Hey, buddy. It's a weird. I've never seen him look like that. But yeah. Uh-huh. That's him.
Who is this?
James McAvoy.
Oh.
So, it's not a great, honestly, no offense, Sturge, that's not like my favorite picture of James McAvoy. There's Brad Pitt. But James McAvoy was like the younger Professor Xavier in the X-Men movies. He was in several other movies. He's got really big roles that I can't think of off the top of my head. He was in the Dune thing way back in the day. He was, so there was the old Dune movie that ended with Paul Atreides doing the thing, and then there was the sci-fi miniseries that came out that also included Children of Dune, and you got to see Paul Atreides' children, and James McAvoy played Leto the Second.
Okay, yeah, he was hot in that.
I think he was young in that, but yeah.
He was really young, yeah.
But he's been in a lot of other stuff, and I'm floored every time I see him. I think he's got a great acting ability. He kills every accent he tries. His home accent is hot as. Oh, damn it! I'm putting in more bleeps. But yeah, I've always kind of there's always been dudes. I mean, there's been a few guys in my actual like real life that I was like, okay, I wasn't gay, I'm pretty sure, but he's really cute and like nice and like look at that smile, you know? So
Well,
that was the initial, but of course I'm pansexual, so
yeah,
like how
I was
could
gonna
I,
say,
you know?
I don't think you're straight.
Yeah, I was never really, I just didn't know it at the time.
But like Ghost, for instance, he has definitely explored the possibility of being bi and decided like that just isn't, not decided, but realized that that just doesn't actually do it for him.
Yeah.
However, even he has, I might go a little gay for this person.
Yeah, here and there.
Here and there, like it's not a lot. Like it's really like just usually one, maybe two people at most. But like, yeah, that would I would. It's kind of like saying I might experiment with this again and see if anything happens. So yeah, I really liked Morpheus' story because it touches on that. It touches on that kind of almost forbidden male love kind of thing that I think that a lot of guys actually do experience but don't feel comfortable talking about.
And that's part of the reason why I was so thrilled with Murphy's article here is because like he's just coming out there and saying it to everybody and like getting it out there and showing that like it's not weird, it's not a bad thing, it's a good thing. Look at what this has like shown me about myself. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like it's I thought it was very well needed piece of content.
Right,
So.
it's kind of a bridge to like not to have heterosexual males become homosexual, but to have one experience is like, oh, I bet being gay is just having this all the time. And then you can understand a little bit better, like, oh, okay, well, this isn't condemning. This isn't the worst thing in the world. It's not what I would choose. It's not what I want. But at the same time, I can understand, you know?
Oh,
I'm
and
all about building bridges.
one last thing for this article. Not only is the Viper, because that's what this person, the character's nickname is from Game of Thrones, is not only is he bi, but he's also poly. And we don't get an enormous lot of like positive poly representation in media. And he is in an open poly relationship with multiple people, and they bring in new lovers. And sure, Game of Thrones is a pretty toxic waste dump for the way that people treat each other in a lot of ways, but this dude and his partners are all very wholesome towards each other, from my perspective, if I remember correctly. God, I
Okay.
hate to read it and find out that I was wrong.
As a side note, this picture of this dude saying polyglamorous relationship, this, I'm, bro, he is clearly a himbo.
Yeah.
He's very
Seriously.
pretty, but like, there is nothing behind those eyes.
Oh, we love a himbo.
I love himbos, but it is so, he's just such a himbo.
In related
Polyglamorous. That's so silly.
news, I started watching Dragon Ball recently. I only say that because the Dragon Ball Z abridged version of Goku is the himboest himbo that's ever himboed. Anyway, that's off
Anyway,
topic.
moving
Ready to go on?
on. Okay, so this is usually the slot that we have for abuse articles. And this isn't an abuse article itself, but it does shine a light on abuses that happen within the LGBTQ community that we don't actually think about. And it's not even really within the LGBTQ community that these abuses are happening, but rather it's complicated.
This article is called "Homosexuals Are Endangering a Long-Lasting Tradition" by I'm going to call it Nanny Hurley. Could be Nanny.
Could be Nani.
Apologies if I'm mispronouncing your name.
Sturge says it's Nani.
Okay, cool. And the article is a slight debate because I was like, because like I read that title and I was like, wait, are we against same-sex marriages here? Is that what we're
Yeah,
doing?
it does
And that's
kind of have
not.
that sound to it.
So just a tiny little debate, but the kind of like the point of that, if you don't mind me saying, stop me if you want to, is that Brazil has had a pretty bad problem with child marriages. And interestingly, 0% of those child marriages are same-sex marriages. Am I getting that right?
And I mean that's the big reveal, so we kind of
Well, I mean, it's pretty early
spoiled
that
a little
reveal
bit,
is.
but yeah, the point of the article is to show that like there are traditions that like oh, so a lot of people's arguments about how same-sex marriages are bad, they often point to, you know, they're destroying traditions. And that's why the title is the way it is, because it's addressing that perspective of gay marriages being a destruction of traditional values. But the tradition that we're calling into question here, that we're really shedding the light on, is it really a tradition that we want? And this is about the Brazilian government and data that we get from there, because in a lot of first world countries, you know, child marriages aren't even allowed. They are illegal. So we can't judge them by that. But there's a lot of places where it is illegal to be gay, but it is perfectly legal for a 12-year-old to get married to her pedophile abuse raper.
In fact, there was a reference in this article of a law that specifically allowed for a pedophile rapist to marry the victim and avoid being penalized legally with the con I think it included consent of the parents of the victim, I think, but I could be wrong about that.
But even in that case, like, it doesn't really help the child. The
No.
idea of that law is basically that, you know, if the rapist decides to take responsibility for the impregnate, you know, the child and their child, then I guess it all is well, but that doesn't actually benefit them to then be under the control of the person that took away their autonomy, that took away their childhood, and forced them into a role they may not have even wanted.
Right.
Like, you want to talk about forced gender roles? Like, what if this was a female presenting person that didn't even want to be married or have kids or didn't feel like a female? But they were raped by a pedophile at, you know, 12 years old. Well, in Brazil, the pedophile has the right to ask for their hand in marriage.
Ability. I don't know if it's like a right as imposed. Maybe right is a right word.
Yeah, it
Never mind.
is, because it's a
Well,
law.
yeah.
It's given to them as a right. And that's kind of upsetting.
Yeah, and we're going to the extreme example here, but regardless of that one extreme example aspect of it, there are a staggering number of child marriages around the globe. And this article really points specifically at Brazil, but doesn't stop from talking about the other countries that do the same thing. And there's a lot of data in here too. Do you mind if I throw out a random number real quick that I found?
Sure.
Between 2013 and 2019, a staggering 1,988 girls and 158 boys under the age of 15 were wedded in Brazil alone.
And none of them were homosexual.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the whole point of this
Well,
article that she has beautifully lined out.
actually, let's be real clear with that last thing that you said. Those children could potentially have been,
The marriages weren't
but the
homosexual.
yeah, but they were not same-sex marriages,
Right.
exactly. But yeah,
Yeah, for all we know, the children themselves may have been homosexual and not had the ability to make any sort of decisions about who they wanted to marry whatsoever. That's unclear.
Yeah, and the article really takes the two different things happening in the world where the LGBTQIA plus folks are being mistreated around the world, and also child brides, child marriages, I should say, are happening around the world too, and puts them into a very sharp light that I thought was needed. Very good.
Yeah, yeah. So not quite an abuse situation that helps a lot in the first world countries, but it is sort of a social abuse almost in certain places. And it sheds a light on the idea that maybe the traditions aren't great to begin with. The ones that truly are quote unquote under threat because of same-sex marriages may be traditions that are good to let go of for the public health of the community as a whole, not just for children, not just for homosexuals, but for everybody. I think it benefits everybody if children stop being forced into marriages.
Right. I don't know if, I think it was a line in this article, but like the line comes through in my head that's like, just because we've always done something doesn't mean we should continue to do so.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I want to call out a couple more statistics that were brought up in the article real quick, just because they're staggering to me, and I want it to be in as many public places as possible stated.
Yeah, okay.
But Brazil has pretty, let's say, progressive laws regarding LGBTQIA plus folks. But regardless of the fact that they have legal protections over there, over 30% of the reported transgender people killed that were killed in 2023 were killed in Brazil. Almost a third of every reported transgender murder in an entire year.
Of course, that doesn't mean that it's 30% of all transgendered people that were killed.
No,
it's just the ones that were reported.
Yeah. And to follow that up, real quick, according to Transgender Europe, an organization, over 70% of murders of trans and gender diverse people happen in Latin America. But it also makes sure to mention that, like, Latin American countries report these incidents, and a lot of countries in other places do not report those instances. And so you're not going to necessarily get the full picture of what that really looks like. But of the reported ones, it's Latin America that's doing a lot of that. And I don't mean to like degrade the whole region. I'm sure that there's wonderful people that love everybody in those regions and everything like that. I just want to show that it's a struggle for the LGBTQIA plus folks that live in that area.
I think the thing is, because I could have sworn just like maybe 5 years ago that Latin America still had laws on the books that made it illegal to be any part of LGBTQ. Like, I thought that was true, like 5 to 10 years, maybe. Mm-hmm. So I think the issue here is that when you finally start trying to turn that around, it seems like it's getting worse because you're starting to pay attention. You're starting to report all of the damage that's still going on while you're trying to clean it up, while you're trying to change things. And so the other countries, the, what was it, like 61 other countries that it's illegal to be gay, it's illegal to be any of these things that aren't the traditional heterosexual lifestyle. If those countries, any one of those countries, decide they're going to change and, you know, make it okay and change the laws and everything, then they'll be the ones at the bottom of the totem pole.
Right.
Because that's kind of the way it works. The worst countries are going to be the ones that are the most recent in their changes. If they're not, like America, then obviously there's some systemic problems that are deeper than just making laws that are different. Like, we have other problems beyond what laws are on the books.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, that was our deep, heavy article. Do you have anything more you want to say about that one?
No, it was deep and heavy, but I feel like it was necessary. It helps paint the perspective that there's no wrong answer to sexuality. There's only a wrong answer to how you treat other people.
Yep. Agreed.
So here's the last one. And this is the one that inspired this whole episode to be LGBTQ themed. It was published over a week ago. And when I read it, I was just like, nope, this has to be on episode one of season five. It just has to be. And it's by, so the medium name is I Napoleon B, but their actual name, I didn't save it on here. What is the name?
Sergio says Napoleon.
Napoleon? Okay. They filled out the form, and then because on the form I ask, like, what name do you want me to use for merchandise and everything, and they told me to use their dog's name. And I'm trying to find that information.
Yeah, Fifi. That's right.
Ah, Fifi. Yeah, Fifi.
Fifi?
Yeah. Or Fifi. Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know why they wanted me to use their pet name, but that's where
cute.
It is. Yeah, it is
that's
cute.
That's freaking adorable, and I love it.
So the article is called, What Does a True Gay Friend Expect You to Bring into Your Gay Friendship? Subtitled Unfiltered, Unrestrained, and Unwavering.
Yeah, this really kind of warmed my heart, honestly.
Yeah, so he found this gay friend before he came out of the closet himself.
Yeah.
And I guess for many years, I don't know how many years, but for some years, they were basically a straight man and a gay man in this very close friendship. And then when he came out, you know, I think at some point he went to his gay friend and, you know, there was a little bit of fear that, like, I don't know, would he be upset for the distance or upset at my life choices kind of thing. And he's just, I don't know, he just describes this beautiful friendship that I don't think that the gay part is necessarily required in it for everybody, because I think that there are experiences where this happens in heterosexual relationships. I think this happens in, you know, women, between women, whether they're gay or not. But I think for men specifically, it might be more difficult to find this kind of relationship without the gay mother, which is what he called his friend, is this kind of motherly presence to him.
Yeah. What? My gay mother, and I love that. I think it's cute. I think that Napoleon found an amazing person, because, like, there's some amazing people out there that are, like, willing to help you get through anything. And, like, there's a lot of people out there that are not. They're only going to be there when it's convenient or they're available or they have time. But to find someone that can still be that cool after not talking to them for a year or 2 years or whatever, it's rare, I think.
I will say, I think it's more likely, like, I've had gay friends in the past, and the unfortunate thing is I lost the ability to contact them. I have no idea how to get a hold of them, because I was troubled. I deleted numbers out of my phone after a while, because I was like, they don't want to hear from me again, and I don't know how to break the silence, so I guess we're just never going to talk again. And I can't help but think that some of the friends that I had, especially the gay ones, would have had similar responses. Not all of them, but some. Like, I have, like, in my head, like, a few people that I'm like, you know, they probably would have been a lot more understanding than I gave them credit for in my youth.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm kind of skimming through this article again, and Napoleon did very clearly point out that, for him at least, and I assume for a lot of gay people out there, there's things you can only talk about with your gay friends. Experiences that they've gone through that no one else is going to understand or have experienced.
Yeah,
So.
I will say, I knew this guy, and I'm gonna use his real name, but I only know his first name anyway. We called him Gay Rob, and he was amazing. I wanted to talk to other people the way I talked with him, but yeah, you definitely can't. I couldn't talk to another guy that way that was bi or heterosexual because like there'd be too much of this weird sexual tension along with it. And even though I was attracted to Gay Rob, because I'm attracted to everybody, he like it was fun to just for him to be like, oh yeah, I know. You know what I mean? Without there being any additional responsibility to that. But talking to other women about the same things that I was talking to him about was also difficult because women often have this whole like challenge thing under like an undertone of like comparing me
Competition.
to you and yeah, and he didn't have that either. So yeah, I do think there is some truth to I'm not gonna say that like you can't find that anywhere, but I think that it's really difficult to find that kind of relationship in somebody who is not a gay man.
And it was delightful. I love getting to read about relationships, friendships that are, that close, and just seeing people be there for each other like that. I think it's so cute, and it makes me happy. How
Goodness.
are we doing, Tam?
I think we're doing pretty good.
Do you have anything else you wanted to say about Fifi's article?
Only that it really like made me think of that one gay friend that got away, you know? Well, all of them, honestly, but there was one in particular that like I have no idea why we just stopped talking. I just got too troubled to deal with anything and then deleted his number along with a bunch of other ones when I got a new phone. And it wasn't that I deleted the number, it was like I got a new phone and then just only ported over the numbers that I was using. It was laziness. That's what it was. It was laziness. And it's really sad. And I'm happy. I'm really happy for Fifi's experience. I feel
Me
like a
too.
little bit like I can live a little bit vicariously through his experience. So, yeah.
Well, I think that that covers everything. I'm starting to lose my voice a little bit.
Oh, that sucks.
Well, not like, I don't think physically. I think like the gumption. Yeah, I'm running out of steam.
Sturge's gifts are on point, though.
Yeah, I'd love to see him.
Well,
We missed
thank you to
him.
Sturge for being a part of the live recording.
Yep. And if you, dear listener, want to be a part of the live action, you could join our Discord through the invite link on themonsteralley.com, which also has links to the Spotify, the Substack, and the Medium article. Thank you, listeners, for coming along with our very gay journey today. It's been delightful
So
having
gay.
you here. So gay. I'm eternally mortal, and I hope you find smiles this day.
And you can find us on medium.com or through themonsteralley.com, themonsteralley.com. I am the accidental monster, and remember to follow yourself always.